on today's Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.Zaptoit.com, we welcome back our boy Michael Muni from The Young and the Restless. He's got a lot to talk about, from charity fundraising to trying to get some changes going on with this Daytime Emmy process to, of course, we got to talk about what's going on with Shaddam. All this and more, so stay tuned. Michael, welcome back to the podcast, man.
What?
What it do?
No.
What it always seems to do.
My brother from another mother, but all right. Let's dive right in. The first thing I wanted to talk about, you've been on Twitter discussing a lot, changing the subject to something serious. See, I learned from the Diane Sawyer School. Let me go ahead and now get my serious face on. But seriously, though, you are raising funds for the Hirschberg Foundation for Pancreatic Cancer Research. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Well, the shortest version that I can tell you, because I tend to be quite loquacious, as people over time have figured out, I got a big old mouth. Basically, it started with my uncle, Mike, my mom's closest brother of all her brothers, who, growing up, I really looked up to in a lot of ways. He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and of course, the whole family starts doing research on it once he's been diagnosed, and we all learned that some atrocious number, like 95% of people spoken the words, you have pancreatic cancer, will be dead guaranteed within 10 months. And the other 5% have a few years to live, and there's the occasional straggler that tends to make it past that hurdle. It's one of the most fatal cancers on the planet, and it is, I think, the third most underfunded cancer in the world. So that disparity is something that I was like, okay, I want to get behind, because there's stuff I don't want to disclose about people even closer to me and my family that are directly related to me that have leukemia and diabetes and things. I don't want to get that out in the open, because I don't want to start fighting for causes for my family that are, my family members are still alive, because I feel like I would be treating them like they were dead. So I kind of silently behind the scenes deal with that stuff. But I figured this was something I could get vocal about. My uncle got it, and it took him so fast that I just wanted to get behind something that I was emotionally attached to, that I was emotionally detached enough from it that I wouldn't break down into tears and have trouble promoting it and talking about it a lot. I needed that distance and that space. So, you know, my uncle was actually still alive for the very first 5K, 10K that I was involved in, and I ran in it and I medaled in it. And the thing that he and I shared in common is we were both cross-country track runners growing up. And so I sent him the medal, and I dedicated it to him when I placed in the race. And he got it. And then, like a week or two later, he passed. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to get involved from that point on. And here it is, 6-7 years later. And it's still going strong. We're trying to raise more and more money. Unfortunately, it takes people like Patrick Swayze and bigger name people to die of this disease. Mm-hmm. There to be more notoriety and more publicity that comes to it. You know, I mean, breast cancer is a sexy cancer. Brain cancer is a sexy cancer. You know where it is. You can touch it. You see it. You look at it. You know where that. But pancreatic cancer is this thing that people don't really know what pancreas do, how they function, their necessity, where they are in the body. So you don't get people really involved in wanting to help get behind it. So that's kind of what I do.
So you're doing this as a part of the LA Cancer Challenge 2011. We will post a link to your donation site, and your fundraising goal is $5,000. It looks like you're a little more than halfway there, so we will help you get the word out with that. Also, something that you are definitely, something that you're getting the word out about in recent weeks has been Daytime Emmy nomination reform. This has been a sticky subject over the years, to say the least. And notably, it seems to always largely kind of come back to your show, being one that I don't know if it's because YNR is the number one show or because it generally gets a lot of nominations or more so than other soaps. But it seems to always be kind of the epicenter of this debate. Barring the obvious, which is a situation which, you know, we all know that there have been several people, including yourself, that have been left off of this process and caused all of us outrage. What has fueled your fire in taking up this charge?
I think fairness, and I think I don't like to I don't want to watch a football game or a boxing match that's been fixed, because then you're playing a big trick on me and the rest of the audience, and it's not right. So why don't we see something that's as fair as possible? You know, when I say Usain Bolt run in the 100-meter dash, usually the guy who's the fastest in the race gets the medal
Michael,
and wins.
hey, Michael, you know you got two dudes on here that watch soap operas. We all know. All these
I
football
do. I'm
fans.
following you, and it's probably like Greek to them. I'm like, okay, I got you.
Oh no, come on now. Usain Bolt's the fastest man in the world. I mean, come on, the man is like super tall, beautiful, has like a
you know,
he's like
say something like Prada or something to help a brother out, you know.
Okay, wait. Let me do this. Like when the female team of synchronized swimming, when they get the medal. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding. Luke is probably too mad at me because he watches college football. So go ahead. Back
No,
to your
really. I mean, look, when you see people awarded something, you have to sort of acknowledge that then there has to have been a competition to receive such award. And I want to see a fair competition, and you want to see a level playing field. And so there's all sorts of things and issues, I guess the thing that's hard for me really is that when you speak out to an audience, like we're doing right now, there's some people who maybe didn't hear the last thing I said or read the last thing that I wrote in this thing or a comment from here, and so they don't piece it all together enough, and so you get people saying like, well, why aren't they complaining so much? Why don't you come up with a solution if you're so smart and goddamn, blah. Well, listen, man, let's just not assume that I'm the dumbest guy on the block and that I've done that. So why don't you just fill in the blanks of the things you think I need to have done to get to this point where I'm speaking from a, from, you know, speaking out about this? Let's assume I've done it. Yes, I've been behind closed doors. I've had the meetings. We've discussed things. I've been on the phone for hours with New York people in the Emmys. I've talked to other cast members, blah, blah, blah. Have I come up with ideas? Yes. Have I gotten other people to come up with brilliant ideas that can fix things? Yes. Have we discussed them? Yes. Are we trying to implement them? Yes. How do we help continue to implement them? Continuing to speak out. So this isn't just some dude who's laying around saying, woe is me, and grabbing my stomach and rolling around in fetal position and just whimpering, going, the Emmys suck. I hate them. I says, and it should be fixed. No, I'm fixing it, and I'm helping fix it, and other people are too, because we're disgusted with just how bad it's been. And at the end of the day, do I want an Emmy? Sure. That would be cool. That'd be fun. Okay? But I know in my heart who deserves the Emmy every year. I feel like I got a pretty good eye on what the talent is and who should be nominated and the groups of people who should be and shouldn't be. And sometimes they got it right, and sometimes they couldn't be more wrong. But way outside of selfish purposes, wanting an Emmy myself, because believe me, that Emmy I can put on eBay and get what, $400 for it, $1,800? That's going to pay what, like 2 months of my car insurance? I mean, come on. I don't. An Emmy is not going to do anything for me in my life or my career. Show me the last daytime Emmy that anybody's won that all of a sudden got them the next big Matt Damon, Clint Eastwood movie. Okay, I'm not stupid. I don't need the damn Emmy, but I want things done right, and I want it done fair. The truth is, where you have to ask yourself, where does winning an Emmy help? Does it help the cachet of the show? No, because I still think that some shows get laughed at and mocked even after they win daytime Emmys. The problem isn't with the shows that are winning the Emmys or the people who are winning them. The problem is the Emmys themselves becoming a joke in the business. And when the Emmys become a joke, the regular mass audience looks at the Emmys as sort of a microcosm for the daytime industry. And they feel, rightly so, that if the Emmys are a joke, and if they can't get it right, then the daytime shows must be a joke. And all of it must be a mockery. And it's all a bunch of crap. And so, therefore, they're giving up on everything. The daytime Emmys ratings are awful. The production has had to become more about Las Vegas and like the Travel Bureau of Las Vegas than about celebrating actual soap stars. I mean, I was appalled to see nominees. You couldn't even, you know how at the very end of like a commercial, they'll say like, money back guaranteed. That's how they announce the names. It's like, and the nominees are, and the winner is, I mean, we didn't even get that. Not only did we not get to see a picture of the person and maybe a 5-second clip or whatever, and you get to people who aren't the diehard fans, who already know all the actors and know them by name. We're talking about the mass audience. How do you reach out and get new audiences and people getting excited about daytime Emmys again and then daytime shows as a result? You get those people excited by them getting to see their work. They don't need to see Big Bird do 25 jumping jacks and then speak 3 sentences in Spanish and then cook a freaking hash brown and feed it to Cookie Monster while Bert and Ernie are making out in the background with each other. You know what I'm saying? I mean, do we need that? What we need is to see the scenes of these actors. That's what I like when I watch the Oscars.
Oh, the good old days. Yeah.
Right? Right, you know, I mean, look, yeah. The Oscars don't always get it right either. But I'll tell you, they get a lot more right than the daytime Emmys.
See, that's what I was thinking. You know, I read all these articles in Variety about the fight to reform the primetime Emmys. And when I look at those nominations, I think each year, okay, yeah, there might be one or two people that are left off. But they tend to, you know, it always seems to be the right people in the right categories nominated much more so than daytime. But yeah, I mean, you see that, I mean, there's a big, huge fight going on right now in Addis, you know, over the primetime Emmys. So, I mean, so do you think that with all this being said, do you think that there'll be some traction to this? Do you think, especially with the industry, you know, with the soaps, you know, dropping like flies and so much changing with, you know, two of them moving online and likely three of them moving online eventually, do you really think that by the time we get this reform, will there be any soaps left on daytime to celebrate at the daytime Emmys?
No. No.
Okay.
But you know, but while I'm sinking in quicksand, I'm gonna keep looking for a vine to grab onto to pull myself out. You know,
I heard
all the
that.
Way to, when I'm sticking my nose up in the air trying to get that last breath. So I'm gonna do everything I can up to the last possible moment. And the truth be told, you know, there are things that are being changed about the Emmys. There are some unanimous decisions that have been made where they're now taking it back to the board I've gotten enough actors that were on both sides of the fence, that were warring with each other, that we were all able to say, this makes sense. We have to change this, blah, blah, blah. Simple things like, let's just say there's two nominees per soap. And let's just operate on the fact that there's 6 soaps. So there's 2 nominees for best actress from each soap. That's not very fair. In the interest of fairness, I see how they were like, well, 2 people have to come from each show. But that's not actually very fair. Because what if, and I'm just throwing these out as arbitrary names, what if General Hospital had the world's worst actresses in it ever since the history of time? And what if All My Children had the world's best actresses in it? And there were like 27, they were 27 deep with Meryl Streep on All My Children. It's not fair that All My Children only gets to nominate 2 of their Meryl Streeps and 25 of them are left behind while General Hospital gets 2 of their douchebags that get to be nominated and go up against 2 of these fantastic people. What you need is the top 4, 5, 6 best actors. And if they all happen to come from the same show, so be it. So then casting should win an award too for having cast all these talented actors. So things like that are changed where it's no longer going to be 2 people per show and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because that is some bullshit. Because I'm going to tell you, they did that for Days of Our Lives because for years, Days of Our Lives, actors would not get nominated. And there would always be 1 or 2 that might need to be. But for, I mean, Days of Our Lives was essentially like Melrose Place for daytime back then. I mean, I don't agree with that. Yeah, what you're talking about is insane because they're not going to mandate that Gossip Girl gets primetime Emmy nominations. Like, you must nominate two people from Gossip Girl. That's
Yeah.
guilty pleasure fun as opposed to, freaking Downton Abbey. I mean, you can't say that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Y&R should not have to limit its listing based on Days of Our Lives or All My Children. I mean, and that's what, that kind of crap, it's, and that's the thing. There's been so many daytime Emmy reforms that it seems like each time they get a little bit more right and then they get a whole lot more wrong. I guess that's where
Well,
I'm a little,
that might happen. I haven't been around this medium long enough to see that arc, but while I'm here,
See, you're
I want
still
to at least.
passionate. It hadn't beat the this industry hadn't beat the passion out of you yet. Give it time.
Yeah, no,
No,
you're not. No, you're not. I'm too damn stubborn, and I might be a little too damn stupid just to get the passion beaten out of me. I think I'm too dumb to let go. So I'm gonna keep, like I said, while I'm sinking in quicksand, I'm gonna be reaching for a vine. That's it.
There you go.
Now, has there been any backlash from actors about your stance? I heard you said that some actors have come together with you on the Emmy reform. Has anybody just like, you shut your pie hole, Muni?
No. If there's any hating, it's going on behind my back the way that soap opera actors have been treating each other since the dawn of time. It's all behind each other's backs. But in each other's face, there really is a lot of solidarity. There's a lot of people speaking out, and there's a lot of people saying, good for you, or there's a lot of people saying, I really agree with that. And I've appreciated some people coming up going, look, I like your idea about X, Y, or Z. But here's why I think it's wrong, and here's what happened in the past. Let me educate you on some stuff that happened 15 years ago and why it didn't work. And I've been educating, going like, oh, wow. Okay, I'm thank you for informing me of that. Now we can sort of build a hybrid between my idea and your idea and come up with an even better one. So there's been a lot of positive dialogue. There's been zero backlash. I've been encouraged this whole time. It's funny to see people who don't understand anything about the industry speculate online and going, well, we're going to see Michael Muni get backburnered on a story now because he's talking out, and CBS is going to get angry. I had someone write me an email that said, you better be quiet about the Emmy process because they're going to write you out of the show. CBS is not going to be happy. I'm like, what vested interest does CBS have in an actor who's diplomatically speaking out about fixing a system that can properly award people? I mean, come on now. So CBS and Sony have encouraged me. They said, we agree with you. This is egregious. We hate it. The more the Emmys get it right, the more the soaps look better, the more audiences that are going to find that it's a legitimate means of entertainment. And then we get more ratings because there's more credibility to all this. So there is a silver lining. There is a happy ending. And I know I answered you very bluntly and said, no, I don't think we're going to fix it all before there's even enough shows left. But
Hey,
that's maybe.
that's what we specialize here in blunt. We don't do, we like it. Give it to us raw and dirty. We don't You ain't got to
Well,
dress it up.
no. You and
Not
me,
that that
we'll.
reflects my personal life, by the way.
No, I'm not going to
Wrap it
wine
up.
and.
Wrap it up. Okay, go ahead.
I'm not going to wine and dine you and take you to a nice hotel. I'm going to grab you and we're going to go to a motel as fast as we can and pull the blinds down and get to business. That's what we're going to do.
Oh my gosh, well.
Say my name. No, go ahead.
No.
So I mean, look, there's been no backlash really. And I feel bad for people coincidentally pointing out timelines where maybe Kristoff spoke out about something and then it seemed like his storyline slowed down and somebody else said something at some point in time and then that's all coincidence. They don't punish people like that. That's not what they do. The only punishment is always financial that comes down to people who are doing negotiations behind the scenes. Anytime you don't see somebody on the air for a while, either A, their character is not working, it's not working out, it's not doing well, it's not getting the ratings, or it's not whatever. B, they honestly cannot come up with storyline for that person. Or C, there's some negotiation going on behind closed doors and things aren't working out too well. And so they're stabbing out, put things on hold. That's the only way you see people off the air.
Yeah, and you
So.
weren't the thing of the difference there, because I know a lot, we've made those jokes about Kristoff. But the thing of it is, Whereas we agreed with what Christoph was saying at the time, he actually was being critical of the writing and of what was going on the show. That's not what you're doing. You're being critical of a process that affects all of the soaps. So that's why, you know, I know I made the jokes. Christoph went on Buzzworthy Radio, and we didn't see him on The Young and the Restless for 6 months. But, you know,
well,
you're
it was
not...
true. It was their movie. It was true.
It's but you're not dissing the storytelling, you know.
So. Right. No, I'm not dissing the storytelling. I'm not stupid enough to diss. No offense to Christoph, because I love that boy. It has nothing to do with what he said. He's a good friend of mine. You know, he's great. But this is just me. I know better than to. You don't walk up to your boss when you're bagging groceries. That was my first job, you know, and say, yeah, this paper plastic thing, this is all played out. It's chafing my hand. So I want silk gloves, and I want shopping carts that hover above the ground so I don't have to push them up over the curb. Like, you got to watch the way you go to your employer and tell them about your job and what you're doing. And so I wouldn't do it that way. That's not the right way to go about it, and you're not going to get a good response or the response that you're looking for. You know, if most actors, if they have an issue with writing – they don't talk to the audience. They talk to the writers, and they do it behind closed doors, you know. And if you've got an issue with another actor, you guys clashing a lot, you do things behind closed doors and you squash things between each other.
Well, look here. I want y'all to do some talking to the writers, because I ain't going to put you on the spot, but as a viewer, I have not been happy with The Young and the Rest of Us as of late.
Yeah.
And let's transition to that point. You know, not you have no control over that, but just on Adam right now, on Adam and Sharon. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the last time we had you on, we talked about, you know, Adam and, you know, how you had become, you'd gone from a character everyone hated to a love to hate character, and how you had managed to sell us, you and Sharon Case, with the chemistry of this Shaddam, this against all odds couple. She risked it all. She risked jail. She risked her everything for this man. And then she went off and screwed some man on a farm who is now her man. And Adam is punishing her because of that. And this couple that we invested so much in is now just stuck in plot-driven stories that have us wondering, why did we invest in Shaddam?
Oh, man. All right. So this is
just from the actor's perspective, like, how are you justifying, you know, everything that you guys are having to play?
Yeah, this is tricky territory for me. I gotta watch every word that I say here in this whole segment, you know, but I'm certainly open to answering it as best I can. You know, look, I've invested so much time and so much of my heart into this Sharon and Adam dynamic. I mean, I really put things on the line for it. And bless her heart, so did Sharon. And we have worked so hard together, admire each other greatly. We get along so well. We enjoy what we think we can bring to the show with the character. And I also like that, you know, our relationship is very polarizing. It's not very galvanizing, you know, but the polarizing seems to be skewed pretty evenly. It's 40-60 or 55-45 or 50-50 with people out there that are like, Shaddam, what, man, hell no. And other people going, I'm diehard, diehard, diehard. That's great. That makes for a good dynamic. So with what's been done recently, you know, it broke my heart a little bit to have to sort of, you know, it hurts when you start to really put your heart into something. And then you have to turn and follow the writing into a darker area where you're going to inflict pain on someone that you've been letting yourself love so hard and so unconditionally. So, you know, I've had to find ways to justify in my head how Adam could be lashing out because he's so hurt and he's so upset and he acted impulsively for the very, maybe for one of the first times ever in his character, he acted impulsively. He's usually very methodical and thinks things through and has a plan and blah, blah, blah. But for him to act so impulsively and drop that memory card in the water, that was true emotion that just caught him. And sadly, the show isn't long enough and has 47,268 characters in it, so there's not enough time to show maybe a follow-up scene where after he dropped the memory chip in the water, there's that, oh my God, what did I just do? Holy shit, I know I was upset, but now there's no getting that back. What do I do now? Now do I sit back with denial, or do I move forward and try and find another angle? You know, and also the way soaps work, it's sometimes hard on an audience because it's not a weekly show. It's a daily show. So you don't see every Thursday the progression of where Adam is going with this, and there's a method to the madness. You have to see it every day and see it dragged out and him just sort of just hate on Sharon and be angry and want to punish her back, maybe unrightfully and unjustifiably so. Let's take out the maybe and just say unjustifiably so. In this situation, it's not really an eye for an eye thing. You know, if he wanted to go eye for an eye and he was pissed that she slept with Sam, well, he needs to go get in bed with Phyllis for a couple episodes and say, now what? Oops, I was trying to save you, Sharon. I was just trying to help you by sleeping with Phyllis. You know, that could be an eye for an eye. But when you threaten, when you dangle someone's 30 years of someone's life and deny them access to their kids for that amount of time in response to someone sleeping with someone, you know, that gets difficult how you sort of embrace playing that. So all I can say is that, and this can sound real company-like and real cheesy, but I would say hang in there, because if there's anything you've seen from Adam since I've been playing him, there's always been an ace up a sleeve, and there's always been kind of a larger plan in a different way than what – with Adam, I guess the easiest thing for me to say is things aren't always what they appear to be. You can see something develop and go, this son of a bitch, and then you realize later, you know, in retrospect, oh, okay, and maybe he just wanted her to pay for a little while, and then blah, blah, blah. You never know with Adam, so I would say hang in there because of – where things are developing, because I didn't put as much effort and heart and soul into this coupling as I did, and Sharon didn't put as much into it as she did for it to just go away. Now, of course, this is a drama. This show is not called a happy, it's called a drama. And, you know, if you want to watch a happy, you know, sit around and watch a sweet little old couple sipping a Slurpee at a mall while they watch people walk by, you know, and that's cute and everything's fine and there's no conflict. This is a drama. You're going to have conflict. People are going to get back together and then they're going to get pulled apart and they're going to get back together and then it's going to be cyclical. So that's going to happen. So we're just in a cycle right now. And I think that both cycles are viable. You need the pulling apart and you need that 50% of people who hate them together to be satisfied for a while. But then you need the other half to be happy when they're together again. You see that they just almost can't, they're two forces. They can't be drawn apart. They're just drawn together, you know? So I don't know. Is that a good enough answer?
Yeah.
You got it, boss. So
Well, Jillian sounds dubious. Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, yeah, whatever. But, you know, now that Sharon's moved on with Sam, who's going to keep Adam, you know, warm and nice?
I hear Rafe's dance card is empty.
Oh, I didn't know. Walk right into that. Damn.
Man, y'all are tripping. Have you seen a ring on Ronan's finger? That boy's eligible, so come on now.
Hey, woo! Now that would be... okay, go ahead.
Is it necessary for someone to keep Adam warm at night? I mean, honestly, I think that, you know, something that I said to the writers a long time ago was this idea that perhaps Adam can be one of the only male lead characters in soap history that doesn't just bed every other person. And it takes a while for him to want to sleep with someone, perhaps. And every now and then, maybe it doesn't. But does he have to be the town whore along with everyone else just because soaps are supposed to be sexy and drama and laying around and rolling around in bed with people? So I like sometimes that juxtaposition of Adam from his brother Nicholas, where he tends to be a loner, where Nicholas tends to do what a buddy of mine in junior high used to say. He was like, man, I'm so horny, all I need to do is find a hole in a heartbeat. You know, so I mean, like, you know, Nicholas you know, maybe he just needs a hole in a heartbeat, whereas Adam needs a lot more than that. And so, you know, that's an interesting juxtaposition between those two characters. So I don't find myself thinking like, maybe I pride myself too much on the character of Adam and feel that he can be an army of one, but I don't ever find myself doing what I find a lot of my other co-stars doing, which is interesting in the soap dynamic. And I haven't come from the soap world, so maybe that's why I don't think the way they do, but I'm always finding them walking around the halls talking, going, who should I be coupled with next? Or I want to get back with my couple and I need to be with, and it's all about coupling. And it's about, you know, being in a couple and that's your next storyline. And I find myself being like, well, is there anything wrong with not being in a coupling and just kind of, you know, sort of floating down the stream and seeing where it takes you? You know, so I'm not really, that's like the last thing on my radar is thinking who I might be with or hooked up with. You know,
well, how are you ever going to win any magazine polls if you don't have a leading lady?
Oh, no.
Yeah, because that's another thing that's another thing that'll pay my mortgage is winning a magazine poll. Yeehaw! Yeah, wow! I mean, yeah. Come on now.
See, we're gonna have to get you, like, some people have like a sober coach. We're gonna have to get you a soap opera coach, just that will show you the important things like squish names and soap theme songs. Does Shadam even have a Phil Collins song? I mean, dude, this will get you to the top.
I don't want to, and of course, there's going to be six dickheads out there. Yes, I called you dickhead, and I'm talking to you because when you quote me, you're going to know that you're the dickhead because I already called you out on it, and then you went and misquoted me and took it out of context. But for the six dickheads out there that are going to mistake what I'm saying, I don't think of myself as Daniel Day-Lewis, okay? Let's just notary sign that. Let's get everyone in the room to agree. I didn't say that. However, if I want to say I'm a credible actor and I'm always aspiring to be better and always looking at the people who I look up to as brilliant actors and professionals, I don't see someone like Daniel Day-Lewis really giving a shit what poll he ever wins and what partnership he's ever going to get with some leading lady. He just wants a juicy character and a good story, and he thinks he can deliver. And that's how I feel I am. Now, to you six dickheads that just are going to go out there and tell people that I think I'm Daniel Day-Lewis, well, you won't be getting a Christmas card from me this year.
You know that's going to be the sad man. Oh, my God, he thinks he's Daniel Day-Lewis. Oh, my God.
Yeah. That thinks it's Daniel Day-Lewis. I love the people out there. And, you know, they're few. Because I got to tell you, man, 98% of the people out there are really supportive and super cool. And they don't act like cowards hiding behind their keyboards and a fake online name. They're really cool and they're supportive. But you have that small minority that are jerks. And they say stuff like, oh, you know where I can see Michael Muni's personality coming through in that scene. I know that was him. He's just playing to the camera and he's just him. And just, really? So for in order for you to say that I'm Michael Muni's coming through the character, that means you would have to know Michael.
Wait a minute. Why you had to do that with a southern accent? Like you just automatically know that's somebody from the south talking like that.
No. Hey, well, hold on now. When I get a little chippy, My southern accent will come out because
I guess he told you.
I grew up in Texas. So anytime I learned to have an attitude, it somehow came with a southern accent.
Are you serious? You grew up in Texas?
Yeah, I grew up in Texas. Of course I did.
Oh! Lord have mercy.
See, I do. I had you at Yeehaw.
Oh, man. Come on now.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I was born in Chicago, and then from second grade to 12th grade, I grew up in Texas, my formative years.
I'll allow that. See, you're honorary Texan then, okay. We got to watch it, because you know that Bush tried to say he was from Texas, and we called hell for that, but, you know, we'll allow you, though.
Well, yeah, I get to be, whatever, I'm not going to say it. Go ahead.
Let's jump for a moment from the bedroom to the boardroom and go back to Nick and Adam for a second, because watching your guys' tweets, Joshua Morrow's tweets with you back and forth, makes me want to see your guys' brotherly dynamic more on screen more and more. Is there any chance that we'll be seeing more of it either in the boardroom or outside of it?
I am doing a drinking game of the word more.
There we go.
Don't give Luke any trouble, man. This guy, I didn't even know he was in on this interview since we started. I haven't heard him talk.
Oh my Lord Jesus!
Look, I think that's a great question, Luke. You are about quality, not quantity. Thank you very much, my friend.
Jesus.
First of all, on a personal level, I've been saying for a couple of years, you know, people will ask me in interviews, who's the funniest cast member? You know, is it Christian LeBlanc or is it blah, blah, blah? Or, you know, do you think you're the funniest cast member and Goofy and whatever? And my answer has always been Josh Morrow. It's definitely him. And so I get like the stink eye from people sometimes, and they're like, what? Nicholas Newman? And I'm like, you don't know. And now with Twitter, his personality has been able to come out, and he really is just about the least judgmental, most patient, most understanding kind of a guy that does not take himself seriously at all, has zero ego. It's exactly the opposite of what I thought. When I was introduced to him in the hallway on my first or second day of work and we shook hands, hey, nice to meet you, I was like, this pretty motherfucker thinks he's so cool. I'm automatically predisposed to hate him and his cheeky ass dimples and all that bullshit and his physique.
And big round booty in those. Oh
my God!
Sorry, go ahead.
So I'm like, and I told Josh, I'm like, man, from the first day I met you, I did not like you, and I told myself I was never gonna like you. I just didn't want to. And then as you learn more about him and you get to know him, he really has become the big brother I never had, and he's given me advice, and he's just kind of, you know, he's got three kids, I got two. He's been in this business a little longer than me. He's a couple years older than me. He comes from Oklahoma. I come from Texas. We have a lot of similar interests. We're big, big family guys, big. And, you know, our kids are like the most important thing on the planet. And so we've been able to bond a lot, and it's gone farther than I thought it would, you know, where it's to the point where I really consider him a true friend. And I mean, a true friend, not just someone I'm friends with because we happen to work on the same show. And when the show gets canceled, we move on and we go on to our next projects, and we shoot one email to each other every 6 months. I mean, he's really a friend. And we have a fun dynamic, and we've been able to sort of expose that with Twitter. I think that Adam and Nicholas, while they'll never be like the two of us and that kind of banter, I think there could be some interesting draw with them where they realize they don't have another brother on this planet. They got only each other, so maybe they'll make do. Maybe they'll do it grudgingly. But perhaps there can be some dialogue between the two of them in the future, nearish future, where they can have earnest discussions about things, and they don't have their guard up, and they're not snarking, and they're not being defensive, and they're not attacking. And you know, I think that would be good. I think it's also good that Adam would have scenes like that here and there, just to show the different side of him, because I think he's great when he's got his guard up, and he's great when he's in attack mode, and he's great when he's in defensive mode and protective mode. But what about normal mode? What about just the earnest, just show a little piece of his heart mode? And I think maybe he could do that with Nicholas. Maybe that could be the occasional brotherly comment or something where it means a lot more. Because in a way, in my opinion, you know, maybe all the failures as a father that Adam feels Victor has sort of done, that perhaps his older brother can make up for it. And he could be wrong. He could have serious daddy issues, but thinking his older brother could fill in the blanks and maybe be there for him in times and places that his dad never was and his dad never would be willing to be. So I think that you can mine a lot of story out of that. The question is, how far would I go? I would love to see a lot of character-driven stuff sort of dictate where all the stories go in the future, you know, with some plot here and there. And that would be a real interesting character-driven storyline opportunity. And I don't mean it as a storyline. Like, the next big storyline is Nicholas and Adam become friends. I mean, let it just become organic within the constraints of a show where here and there there's just a moment that they share, you know?
Well, again, you know, the last time you were on here, I said it, and I was like, just listening to your thought process, you know, I think you need to go ahead and get registered with the Writers Guild, because, you know, not too many people talk about a show or their show specifically actors in daytime. You hear a lot of my character, my character, my character, but you seem concerned with the overall through line of the canvas, and that is that's you know that's being a good artist, I think. Well, Michael, again, you know you're welcome back anytime. We love having you on. You're one of our easiest guests because, you know, we don't even have to prepare much because we know you're going to bring it. So thank you so much for coming back. We're going to post a link about your charitable efforts and try to help get the word out there for that. And I'm not going to give up on y'all. I've been mad. I've been showing out on Twitter, but I'm going to tune back in and, whew, Lord, if I don't find out who killed Diane and some more things, go ahead. And, you know, I'm about to be on Twitter acting a fool again, but I'm going to, you know, it's never about you because, you know, you and my killer Miller, y'all bring it and a few others. So thank you.
and thank you guys for the opportunity again and for those who sat through this interview and listened to everything. But, you're right. It's a team thing. You want your team to do well. You don't care really about your own personal stats. So I want the show to do well. And, you know, that's the goal. And I think where there's some maybe trouble on the horizon with fans thinking certain things, you know, they need to just kind of be patient and maybe wait this out and let us, let us duck and weave. And maybe right now we're just ducking, but in a minute we're about to weave and you're going to like what we do. So, you know, hang in there, obviously. And if y'all even use a 20-second promo clip of me saying the word dickhead and dick like 20 times and you use that as the opener for this thing, I will get on a plane and come smack all y'all.
Well, you're going to have to go to Nebraska because I don't even
know. I was going to say, you just gave us motivation.
Luke is the one that Luke will probably title it dickhead. You know, usually when I say something really nasty or salty, I'll look up and that'll be the name. And I'll be like, I'll be damned, Luke. I didn't mean for you to name the podcast that.
Right. And they're going to be out there. See, he hates the haters. He's even calling them dickheads. Well, look, if you take offense to what I said, then you actually must be it. Because really, I'm not mean.
You know, you're pulling a Tina Fey because she killed me when she, like, accepted some award and basically called out somebody online. I was like,
didn't she call out some people from the envelope? I think that's where
they
were.
I think she did.
She was brilliant. I laughed. I fell off the couch laughing, and I was so inspired by her. I was like, you go, girl. I forget whatever it was, but she stood up there, and she's like, yeah, and Hot Mama 1, 2, 3, and Sticky Pocket, and Big Balls Volcano. Yeah, the three of y'all. Oh man, she just called them out, and I was like, you know what? There's a lot of comedy in that, and at the same time, she's not calling anybody out by their real name. They're still the cowards that were hiding behind their keyboard in a fake name. So she's not, you know, she's having to put her face and her name out there when she speaks, but these people get to say what they say in full anonymity. So the least she can do is put them in a hip check and just go, "Bump, I bumped you. What now? Bring it. You know, see, I'll fight back too. I'll say something." So I liked that about her. And I think that going forward, the future of online criticism needs to have more checks and balances. And I think the stars of, you know, the objects of these fans' frustrations can do some of this checks and balances by calling people out every now and then and saying, look, we're not just going to sit idly by and let you talk shit about us. Every now and then we're going to remind you that we're human and you're talking about a person here. You know, I mean, if you want to say Kim Kardashian's got a big old cottage cheese butt, then you say it in the privacy of your own house with your soulmate or your friend and you can get a good laugh about it. But if you go online and you're typing that stuff in places where, you know, maybe she reads, that's a real person. That's going to hurt her. There's those lines that you can draw. And I think the future, I really believe the future of all entertainment is all going to the computer. It's going to be online one way or the other, whether it's a web series or it's a valuable show like Daytime Confidential that does what they do online. That is the future.
Oh, you say so, that to all the bloggers. How you do, run on. No, really, run on.
Yeah. Y'all look amazing. And the reason that I'm super angry about the Emmys is because they ain't given you Emmys yet. And that's just bullshit.
It is.
No.
It really
no,
is.
This, oh. Listen, that the future is online.
YouTube so open. I want to get up there and be like, oh, Lord, y'all done came to me.
The Vegas commercial just cut you off.
You're right. Damn, damn, damn.
Or maybe like the ghost of Marie Osmond and all her plastic surgery just walked past you and distracted everyone.
Now we're going to give her look, if we're really being like the Emmys, Marie will be Marie Osmond is guest starring on Daytime Competition. It's like, really? Why? You know, because she's on Bold and the Beautiful.
Oh, man. No, she needs to put some meat back on those bones, because she doesn't need to be on a show called The Bold and the Beautiful. She needs to be on like The Bones and the Beautiful. That girl's too skinny right now. she needs to eat a bucket of fried chicken right now and get some meat on those bones. She needs to get fat like me.
There you have Fat Like Me. A memoir by This will go on forever, so we're going to wrap. Thank you for being here, and come back anytime.
Thank you.